Well, hello once again. It is the Lean Into Art Cast, the show where a couple of visual storytellers get together, take a gentle walk around a not-so-gentle topic. And my name is Jersey Drozd, cartoonist and teaching artist. That other guy, the other host of the show, is Rob, who will introduce himself in a moment, and he will explain the system with which we will survive the next hour and change. Rob?
Hey, Jersey. The system that we use in this show, so well planned and thought out by Jersey, which I appreciate, is we explore a sort of a creative puzzle or a question we have, much like if you you run into a new store with like this, like just stacks and stacks of mountains of cans that are so precisely placed, and you're super curious, like what would happen if I pluck just one can out from the bottom of this stack, and then, you know, what do I do from there, right? So that's kind of how the podcast goes, where we begin, we examine like which of these stacks of cans would we like to pluck the thing out, and we talk about it and assess it, and that's kind of like the high level overview of the topic. But then when we find that one, that those nuggets that we want to, that we think are sort of pivotal or interesting, we get deeper and more practical, and we pluck out cans and then run around as the whole store becomes a mess and escape. Hopefully
the metaphors are getting more and more abstract, Rob.
Dude, this is a sign where I need to tag out.
slap on the mat. But yes, we usually kick off the curveball. Before we get to the curveball, we've got to introduce our guest this week. First time on this show. But I've talked to this guy on the Comics Are Great show a couple times now, Mr. Stephen McCraney.
Hey, everybody.
DoodleAlley.com, MalinChad.com, cartoonist, comics, visual storytelling advocate. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, I'm definitely an advocate.
And you're the reason that I finally pushed the plunger and started inking in Manga Studio. For the last year and some odd months, I've been working almost entirely in Manga Studio for inking.
And I'm also an advocate of Manga Studio.
Yeah, it was on a Comics Are Great episode. I think you did a demo, or maybe you just described like how the vector erase tool works, and I was like, what?
Like, I'm here. I'm ready.
Oh my gosh, it's so great. But Mal and Chad, we should explain the graphic novel series that you do, or did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Mal and Chad is a all-ages graphic novel series about a boy genius and his talking dog, and they go on all kinds of adventures together. In the most recent one, they build like a weather machine, which kind of goes haywire and throws the whole city into a giant storm. And yeah, basically they build neat stuff and things usually go haywire.
It's a super fun series, and I'll link in the show notes to your appearances in the Comics Great Show, where we talk at length about it and about Manga Studio when you do the demo. But you also do this essay series, DoodleAlley.com. And I think we're going to talk about that quite a bit today when we talk about creative sustainability. But before we get to that, we got to do our mental warm-up exercise, the curveball. Rob, you said you were improvising a curveball when we were setting up for the show, or do you want mine?
Oh, it's very tempting. You know what? I'm going to say I've got a flat tire on my improv mobile. just due to that sort of... oxygen deprived analogy I provided earlier. let's go with yours.
Okay. Well, this one's for both of you guys to get us warmed up. And we'll only spend about 5 minutes on this thing.
Awesome.
Having a plan. Let me start by this. I'll start with this question. Having a plan, often very important in the creative arts, right? Whether it's your career or a project or just setting down to do some kind of like an inked sketch. The sketch implies a plan, right? What if I have a plan for my career and I've got like an idea of where I want my career to go, and in along the way, I discover there's something else that I'm really interested in, but I find no immediate way for this piece to lock like a puzzle in the rest of my plan. But I'm really interested in it. Something resonates about it, and it's really compelling to me, but I can't go to my friends and say, this is how this fits into my 12-part plan. do I? Well, let me just ask you guys, how do you face that decision, if you've ever faced that decision, or if I'm a young person coming to you and like, Mr. McCraney, Mr. Stenzinger, I've got this thing I'm really interested in, but it doesn't really fit into my plan of being a cartoonist. Should I pursue it or not? I don't know.
I'm really curious what you think about that, Stephen. Kind of few thoughts, but I almost want to explore the question a little bit more, where how big of a departure is it, kind of thing.
Like, yeah. In a college, it would be in two different departments of the school.
I think that, especially in, like, I think we're getting to these days when information and ideas is the key to kind of surviving in this market. It's not as much about making things. Making things has become very easy. It's just like the ideas of what to make has become the valuable thing. And if you find something that is really far from the path that you're on, there's a potential there that you could put two things together that no one else has put together before and create your own niche. And so I don't know. I would say go for it, because by diversifying, I think that we're always looking for connections. And by going off into something that seems like a totally opposite direction, you might be surprised how eventually things sometimes do end up connecting, and you can kind of create something that hasn't existed before because no one has ever thought to connect those two disparate elements. So I would say go for it. Follow your dreams, Jersey.
All right, I will go start doing the burlesque dancing in addition to my comics illustration, but I want to hear from Rob on this.
Well, I would be all for it as well, obviously, especially the burlesque tie-in. What's funny, I take a different path to a similar thought on that. I think it really depends a little bit on the, I think it's good to do a self-check on the sort of where you're at on the path. It's like you can, especially if you're just starting out, like the more experience you can rack up, the better. And, the more perspectives you can, immerse yourself in, the better. But I would say sometimes when people are, I don't know, along a path a ways, I don't know, we can you have some of the grass is always greener, right? And so almost a little bit of self-check and finding a way to dip your toe in, because, well, a lot of people will get into a job that maybe they don't enjoy as much as they once did, and then see like, well, they're like, I could have a creative independent path and it's going to be so much better, right? And just jumping straight into that could be perhaps too much risk. And you may be able to find a more a gentler progression toward that other path. It's not always like an either or.
But okay, I want to close on this thought. But Dad says, at some point, son, you have to be one or the other. You can't be both. If I decide that I want to study mathematics in my spare time, such as it is, at what point do I stop being a cartoonist then? Because I'm spending like a lot of time on math now. Am I a mathematician or a cartoonist? Which am I? I know, I know.
Unedited. Well, it's a tiring perspective, but because I on one hand I want to be gentle with it, but just to be a little severe, I would say, so Dad, do you ask permission for everything that you think of, right? Like, so who are you, like, who told you it was okay to provide that advice, right, at one point? Because that's the premise of the advice, is that there's a granting authority that gives me this position and gave you that position. So where do you get off, Dad?
Shut up, Dad. You don't tell me who I am.
You don't know me.
Yeah.
No, this has been a This has been a burr under my saddle for some time, and actually I want to do a shout out to another podcast, which we don't do enough on this show. I listened to the In Beta show with Gina Trapani and Matt Purdy, which has very little to do with comics, if anything to do with comics. But it's an interesting show about the philosophy in a post 21st century world of work, and by the title's name, it's, you know, it suggests in beta. It's like things constantly being developed and changed and not fixed, and navigating that world. The latest episode was all about the difficulty in describing one's career when you're a polymath, right? Like, not only is it difficult when you're trying to apply for a mortgage, and you're trying to explain to this mortgage broker that, no, I don't have a job, I have 50 little jobs, right? But also to explain to your friends that I'm a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And it was interesting to hear that this is happening in a lot of different fields, right? And that we face a generational shift, but we also face people in our own generation who are, let me just say, they're sold on the previous generation's story of what a career is. And so then they get quizzical when you tell them, you know. That was partly where that came out of, but also partly with some conversations I was having with some students. So thank you guys. I think that was a good curveball. So anything left to put on that one before we go into main topic, before we go 10,000 feet up?
I feel warmed up. Do you feel warmed up, Stephen?
I think I'm ready to deal some damage.
Awesome. All right. Well, then here we go. Time to go 10,000 feet up, up, up. Look at the topic, discuss it in abstract, wrap our brains around a little bit, the whys, the theoretical underpinnings, I guess you could say, of this topic that we want to discuss before we get to the on-the-ground stuff, and say, what can we do with this topic? So, and this one is centered all around Stephen and creative sustainability.
Now, Stephen, sustainable creativity. I always get it mixed up, too.
Okay, sustainable creativity. You did a blog post on doodlealley.com, like an initial, like, sort of manifesto of what I intend to do with this thing before you set out to do it, and then you did it. But can we go back to the manifesto? What was the inspiration for this thing about, like, it was, I'm getting mixed up again, sustainable creativity or
Here's the key difference. If it's creative sustainability, then we're trying to think of unique ways to save the environment. If it's sustainable creativity, then it's a creative practice that lasts a long time. Okay. But I've made that mistake so many times when I typed it. Like, it's just, it's hard to get it right. But yes. So there's been a recent, like, kind of trend in thought and research, this idea that mastery is not some type of innate talent, where there's like an artistic genius that's like born once every century, but instead any individual given 10,000 hours of deliberate practice can reach a level of mastery and skill. And so the problem isn't really, do you have talent or not? It's, can you put the time in? And I don't know if that research is entirely true or not. I prefer to believe it is because of how encouraging it is. It means that someone who believes that they weren't an artist and can't do it can, you know, just start practicing and grow. And I feel like it does relate with how I work as an artist. You know, always trying to grow, always trying to improve. So anyway, assuming that it's true, that it does take 10,000 hours, the questions that we need to be asking in light of this new development have, in my mind, really shifted. No longer, we shouldn't really be asking, like, what techniques does the artist use? We need to ask, like, how did the artist get themselves to practice for 10,000 hours? How do you set up a sustainable practice, creative practice that, like, lasts for so long? It just seemed more and more to me that was a really key issue that someone needed to be talking about. And
Stephen, I've got it right here. Inspiration. Done. Show over.
Yeah.
Just wait for the inspiration to hit you. That's what artists have done for centuries, right? I was inspired. It was as if a voice came from above and descended upon me, and then the ideas just came out fully formed.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's just I mean, I think I get why it's such a common perception that inspiration is something that hits you or something you like find on the side of the road. Or like, have you ever gone? I still do this sometimes, and it's so silly. Like, you've ever gone to like a comics convention, and you see one of these artists that you really admire who's incredibly talented, and you're like, "What kind of pens do you use?" And yeah. as if his pens somehow like made the drawings and not his skill, not like thousands of hours of practice that he put in. And so it's easy. It's so much easier to say like, ah, this guy has all this equipment and inspiration and he has something that I don't have. Yeah. But I think that the reality is a lot more mundane. It's just, he, you know, spent hours and hours every day for the last 8 or 9 years working to master a skill.
Oh, and, you're boring me. That's not a sexy story.
What's funny is, so obviously this, like what you're describing really resonates with a lot of the, a lot of your comics that I was reading on Doodle Alley. And, a phrase that I wrote just sort of, I think I was just sort of soaking it in and just something that like basically is an observation that came out. Or maybe it's a question even is I wonder if what you're describing is like, so tools like this pen that I hold is something that we can, you can obtain fairly easily, right? And that's a very tangible item. Whereas experience that is I think the product of that you're the resource you are investing in and growing to be able to draw upon and benefit from those 10,000 hours of deliberate practice, right? And so maybe it's just the extreme intangibility of what experiences that has to do with has to do with why we focus on one versus the other.
I think that definitely explains just the prevalence of the misconception of what talent is and where it comes from.
I have to say though, like one thing that I found was interesting, I think reading your comics helps provide a pointer toward that experience. I don't know if it gave me that, you know, like, but it resonated with, okay, here are things I have been working on, you know, whatever skill. And, this feels like a really good description of that investment, you know, gaining the experience.
Yeah. I wanted to really explore, like, what is it like to walk that long road? And, so I kind of investigate, like, what is the long road? What type of goals do you have to set up, and how do you structure your goals? And what is improvement, and how do you move forward in your skills? And what is growth, and how do you motivate yourself to keep walking? And how do you not stop walking? And so I'm glad that I'm getting, you know, that resonated with you, just because it's like, what does it feel like to walk the long path? Because that's all it is. It's just a long path. And It's so mundane. I'm making all those essays from Doodle Alley into a book called Brick by Brick. And the reason I call it Brick by Brick is you look at an artist's talent and it seems like this giant castle, this huge monument, but he really just built it one brick at a time. Like it's almost like a process of erosion, you know, every day just a little bit, like just a couple grains of sand. And every day you just lay down two or three bricks, and at the end of, you know, a big period of time, it just builds up, it grows, and it turns into something that's enormous, you know. But
that is hard to understand. Like, now if someone's standing on the other edge of that, like I want that, I can see that. Well, you know, look at Steven's talent; he's cranking out these comics. So do I just have to? What do I do as a starting, when I'm starting out? I'm not trying to jump straight into all the practical, but like, what would be a good mindset even when, you know, it's.
Yeah. As I was reading them, I'm thinking like how you're communicating something that's incredibly hard to communicate. And I think that's why historically there are so many stories of creators, like the young person comes up to the creator, says, "What do I have to do to be XYZ like you are?" And the creator goes, "Oh,
yeah,
dude, it's hard. Suck it up, get to work, put in the hours, and quit whining about it." Right? Like, we've all heard stories like that. And whenever I hear stories like that, I cringe. Oh, it's terrible that they would say. And for better or worse, you know, sometimes it galvanizes people to work harder. Sometimes it turns away. But regardless, I think part of that reaction comes out of the fact that it's really hard to communicate that experience to somebody, like trying to explain, you know, swimming to somebody who's never been in water.
Right? Yeah. And I mean, I know you guys have kind of felt this when someone will basically come and ask you to do a ton of work for free. Cause they think that all your talent and all your ability to make art, it's just like something that you inherited, like a ton of money or something. And so they're like, hey, give me some of that money. You have so much of it. And you're like, are you kidding? I worked like my whole life to get to where I am. And now you're asking me to just give it away.
It's funny. I've never heard it described like that, but that is perfect.
And that's why I get so offended, you know, when someone asks for something for free. It's like, are you kidding? Because and it's rough. Like, that's what makes freelancing so rough, is because no one can see the invisible, you know, experience like you phrased it.
Well, and maybe that's the power of this. Is a little bit of a, well, it's kind of a geeky comparison, but maybe that's what makes like the Vulcan mind meld so powerful, where you're just, it's the achievement of the impossible. It's transmission of experience, right? Where you're just purely understanding, arriving from nothing to pure understanding. And that's, I don't know, probably a shocking transition.
Yeah.
Speaking of transitions, I've got the segue to the next like little segment of this discussion that I was hoping to hit on, and you guys are leading me there wonderfully with this whole idea of this inability to communicate this experience. You just have to experience it, right? And, you know, guys like Steven can point the way and give us a sense of the experience, but everybody's experience is going to be different. So, okay, I got a production assistant now, which is awesome. And she was in the studio, and this was earlier this week, and she was working on something. And I could see where the illustration was going. But she was at that first third of the way through the piece. And it was really starting to kind of get to be a struggle. And she's starting to like not feel so sanguine about the piece. And I kept looking over her shoulder going like, no, it's coming along really good. Don't worry about it. Just keep pushing. It's going to be fine. She's like, no, this is terrible. I'm a horrible human being. I have no right to breathe air. And I'm like, keep on going. It's going to be okay. And then like she got to that two-thirds part where she's like, hey, this is kind of coming together. This is looking pretty good. I'm like, see, I told you it's going to be fine. And she got to the end. She's like, look at what I did. And she's like, look at what I did, right? And it reminds me of something Kazu Kibuishi of Bolt City on Twitter, at Bolt City on Twitter and boltcity.com. He recently posted this on Twitter. I pulled it up on the screen. Creative process. Step one, this is going to be awesome. Step two, this is hard. Step three, this is terrible. Step four, I'm terrible. Step five, hey, not bad. Step six, that was awesome, right?
Yeah.
And when my production assistant went through that cycle, I turned to her when she was done. I was like, that is going to be everything you ever create. Like, I've been at this thing my whole life. You never escape from that. And she's like, it's like, well, it feels really good right now, but I don't want to go through that again. I'm like, you have to. there's no escape from that, kiddo. You are stuck. Welcome to the sickness. We all have it. But so if that's the cycle, if even Kazu Kibuishi, one of the finest graphic novelists working today, goes through this, what hope have we? I think beyond the talent versus 10,000 hours argument, the point is that if you're engaged with being creative, you're going to go through the cycle. What happens when you get to steps 2 through 4, right? Or 3 through 5, rather. Like, this is terrible, I'm terrible, and so on. How do you push through? And I think that's kind of like the rationale behind doing something. Like right? Like, or here's me coming in as devil advocate. This is hard. Suck it up. You know, it's a cycle, so you'll get through it. You don't need to go to some like advice column to get help on this, right? Rob's got that look.
Well, I mean, it's really up to one's own psychological profile, right? Like, how do you deal with delayed? Let's see, the transition between feeling the difficulty and then enduring it to the result, right? sometimes overly summarized as like delayed gratification and whatnot, where, or everyone's got a different relationship with that. Yeah. Because some people would be great with the suck it up. Some people are like, you know what? I like the grit. I like the endurance. I can do this, right?
I like to stoically endure hardship. And like, yeah, there may be like the beginning of a single tear, but you won't catch it on camera.
You give the tear and then he sucks it back into his eye, like,
yep, you just pull it back in. But that works for some folks, right? I mean, that, I don't know. Who might
say? Sure. But then I think about like a lot of us. Here's the question I would give to them. Why do we go to friends or family for advice or guidance, right? Why do we go to other people for, right? And this also reminds me of...
Why did Stephen write his book, right? I mean, that's like, you sometimes it helps to see that hints that it's going to be okay.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, I think there is something to knowing that, you know, Kazu struggles with the same thing that you're struggling with, that can be helpful, knowing that failure is part of every creative process, and that when you see something that's incredibly successful, it's a product of thousands of failures. Even if it's a master just putting a perfect drawing on the page, you know, you just got to remember about all of the thousands of bad drawings that he did before that, and knowing that doing bad drawings and failing is the path to mastery. Like, failing means you're learning something. Failing means that you're growing. And if you're having a successful attempt every single time, that just means you're repeating information that you've obviously already mastered. You know, failing means that you're on the edge of your skill and you're making things harder for yourself, so that you have to learn and you have to grow. And so knowing that's natural and that's expected can be helpful, I think, to kind of weathering that struggle.
I just think it's interesting that even though I know that it's coming, every time I work on something, I know that that cycle is ahead of me.
Mm.
It still doesn't prepare me for how rotten it feels when I'm at that point. And I don't want anybody to misunderstand me to think that I'm one of those tortured artists who sits around like the Lady of Shalott with my hand on my forehead. Most of the time I am really literally this cheerful, but when you hit that moment, you know, and you feel that pang in your gut, it's amazing to me that it feels fresh every time. And then, yeah, I like to go to other people's writings, like looking at the Kazu's tweets or reading Doodle Alley's, because I'm reminded again, I wanted to do a plug for the Extra Lean show. So for those who listen to the Lean into Art show, Rob and I do an extra show in between these shows, which you can get from our mailing list at leanintoart.com. Episode 22, Rob. Episode 22, you pointed out the dangers of relying on a single data point, right?
Mm-hmm.
You have a single data point of feedback, you're not getting a complete picture of what the experience or what the thing is that you're trying to make or that you're going through or whatever. So I'm my only data point when I'm going through this. This is terrible. I'm terrible. One data point, right? And that's where... Well, yeah.
You can plunge into a path where you're reinforcing your despair or you're reinforcing your optimism, right? And I think that's where having one data point, it's just super vulnerable. I think it's a very vulnerable position, especially if you're reinforcing your despair, which... I think in that, that's one way I would summarize my initial approach to making that decision was more based on that. Like, yeah, this they're echoing my fears. I better not do this, and you know, that kind of thing. But you know, the whole premise, Stephen, it was the essentially. I had a big crazy idea, a lot like what Jersey framed up in the curveball, and I think I had some well-meaning folks that I knew that said that does sound pretty crazy. I don't think that's going to work, and I backed down initially, even though I was plenty, you know, I really was in a good position to take the risk, but. You know, and then eventually took the risk later. That's another weird thing. It's not all or nothing all the time, right? So
no, Rob, there's a certain point in your life where it's you're incapable of doing creative things anymore. No.
And it's today, right now.
Yes, right
now.
Now
it's done.
I know there's certain situations, like if I get run over by a bus and my arms and legs are ripped off and I get some kind of like horrible head injury, it's probably going to be a long road before I can make comics again the way I can do them now. I get you, that one person who's saying, well, but yes, okay, but for the most part, if you lead a normal, healthy life and no kind of horrible calamity happens to you, that is one of my hot button issues. That's the one of those magic spells to make me vanish, is to say like, oh, you're too old to do that now, or it's too late to do that now.
Yeah.
Was the one data point that you were basing your actions on just the opinions of the people who were advising you, or was that mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sorry for I did not explain that well. I'll summarize. Essentially, I was talking about when I had a business plan to have a bunch of friends who were interested in making a video game, but then we wouldn't be paid for a while, but we'd be doing it because we all love doing it, right? So it's essentially speculative work, and you know, this was roughly, you know, this was many years ago actually. And I think it was wise on one hand, where people were like, no, that's crazy. People who have those skills that you're looking for won't do it, whatever. Right.
Yeah.
And, but I mean, people do things for the love of doing it all the time. And now there's a bajillion examples of that, which would have been helpful at the time. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then so yeah, I just took the advice at first, and then a few months later, changed my mind.
You're like, nope, I'm out.
Yep.
I think another part of that, preparing yourself for that struggle, and I think this is what makes my book unique. I would say that one of the biggest obstacles that a lot of artists run into is that step when you say, my work is terrible, therefore I'm terrible. And
we got to get to that in the on the ground section, because you did a great essay on that. Mm. You are not your art.
Yeah, I think I was nervous because the book I'm writing it from one end reads like a self-help book, and the way self-help books work usually, and the reason they sell so well is because they're like, hey, look, here's heaven and here's the steps to heaven, here's if you just do this plan, you'll be in heaven. And I knew, because I have believed that I could get to artist heaven many times, I knew that by writing these essays a lot of people were going to be like, so when I'm a great artist, when I'm a master, I'll be happy, right? And I wanted to write an essay that was like, no. No, you won't be, because you know, your life is more than your art, and yeah. So it took me a long time to write that essay. I was kind of scared of what people would say, but I think it's a big thing knowing that the work that you create doesn't determine who you are. And I think that a huge obstacle, because I've done it before, where like I remember in college I was so stuck in this mindset that I would like stay up late drawing, and like I would try to draw something that was so good that it would like prove to me that I had the skills to someday make my dreams of becoming a cartoonist come true. Like I couldn't go to sleep almost until I had drawn a great picture, and when I drew a bad picture I would just be in despair, because I was like, now I'm not going to be able to get to comics heaven, you know, this is it. Like, and all that pressure on your art, like that, it's just not a good place to be. So if I could have a choice, I would. I really try to attack the I'm terrible because my art's terrible. I think that's a huge roadblock to a lot of artists.
And a huge temptation to want to identify yourself and base your self-value on the work, because I think you pointed out, yeah, here I'm looking at the comic right now. At first, it's a rush. What a joy to find out that life is a game that you happen to be winning at. What triumph. But something's not right. Something snuck into you the moment you decided that your life is your art. What was once a helpful critique of your work is now an attack on your self-worth. Oh my gosh, yeah. You start to have a paralyzing fear of breaking your hands or going blind or somehow losing the skill that gives your life meaning. You begin to judge people by how well they play your game. Oh man, that's a big one. And you treat the masters of your craft like gods, but you could care less about people who aren't as skilled as you. Beautifully pointing out the dangers, the psychological and philosophical dangers that come in there when you self-identify with the work. Like, you can love the work, you can enjoy the work, you have a passion for the work, but the work isn't you, ultimately. Rob, you look thoughtful.
Yeah.
I wholeheartedly agree. I think that's great advice. So it, which is, I mean, all of that work in Brick by Brick and in Doodle Alley, it is really good preparation. I wonder, what kind of things do you hear from artists that are starting out? How does that go? Because like here's let me frame it up in this way. I imagine myself as a time traveler sometimes, right? And so maybe I don't know. Maybe you do too, Steven. I don't know. Where you're like, would me of this age, and you know, like with you know, if I could time travel and tell me of like 18 years old, 21 years old, 20 whatever, right? What could I say, and would I listen, and would I do anything differently? Or whatever, right? Like, so I don't know, like with that kind of thing in mind, like what kind of experience do you think is getting?
Yeah, I would, if I could, you know, transmit something back in time, it would be this book. Like, this is the book that I wish I had, you know, when I really started getting into comics and when I really started, you know, trying to climb the road. Climb the ladder. It really feels like a ladder often, because you're like, you see all these great artists and you're like, if I could just climb the ladder this high, then I'll make it, you know. And I remember when I was in high school, and there would just be these, I really didn't know about Comic-Con at the time, so when all of my favorite cartoonists started posting photos of themselves at dinner together, like, and I'm like, all my favorite cartoonists are hanging out together and they look so happy. And I'm like, if I could just get into that circle, if I could just be a part of that, you know, that would be wonderful.
Like,
and
like photoshopping yourself behind them with your arms.
Like, hey. Oh man. And it led to some just such embarrassing things, because then I'd actually go to the conventions and just be a booth barnacle trying to like worm my way into this thing, and not, you know, and so I wish I had known these things beforehand. I do get some really neat emails from people who say, you know, I had beaten myself up so bad for my art, and now I've decided, you know, I might just go back and try a little bit. Like, I'll bring out, dust off the sketchbooks and bring it back. So I've been receiving some really neat emails, and it's really been cool to see just the resonance of the book, and what people are saying about it.
No, that's awesome. And there is a Kickstarter campaign for the Brick by Brick book that we will link to in the show notes. How many days are left at the time of this recording? And not many.
There are 6 days left, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So probably like 5 days by the time this goes into the podcast feed. I'll make sure to get this one into the feed tomorrow. But anything else in the 10,000 feet up section, or should we go on the ground and start talking about some of the specific strips? What to do with this philosophy of seeking out others' experiences to inform and help coalesce the decision-making process for your own. Talk yourself off the ledge, as it were. That was a much more succinct way of saying what I was trying to say.
Yeah, I'm excited to dive in. I mean, I feel like this is our chance to do the time traveling now. Now we're like, this is what we're gonna be delivering the goods now. Oh.
I thought Godzilla was coming.
Boots on the ground. The march has happened. Time to go on the ground. And okay, so, you know, it's a good idea to look at others' experiences to get yourself motivated back in the game in whatever attitude gets you back in the game. Let's talk specifically about tips, tools, resources, and action items that people can do to put this thinking into practice. So I want to talk specifically about some of these Doodle Alley strips, and then we've got some other items. And Stephen, feel free to add some of your own books and resources that you would point people at along these lines. But can we talk first about how practice crystallizes your skill set and imitation grows your skill set? So one of the earliest, or is this one early or recent? No, this one's recent. No, it's last year. Never mind. You know which one I'm talking about, Stephen?
Yeah, I got it.
Yeah, practice does not make perfect.
Yeah, this whole, so I'm really indebted to a guy who, like, I've been back and forth from Japan a couple of times, and there's a guy who teaches, he's got a website called All Japanese All the Time, and basically it's just a really great method for learning Japanese, and you'll see a really strong correlation between a lot of the things that I teach in Brick by Brick and his method for learning languages. And I realized after, you know, working through his method, and because he's just all about encouragement. Like, if you think about it, you know, 10,000 words in a language, 10,000 hours in a skill. How do babies learn a language? And yet people who study every day, you know, and take classes and stuff seem like they're really slow and that kind of a thing. So I would definitely recommend, if people are, especially if you're learning languages, but I was just realizing, like, art is a language. And I think there's just some really strong correlations between language acquisition and skill acquisition. The idea that like a baby doesn't like start by learning grammar. And in the same way, like, you know, we don't really need to start by learning all these techniques. We need to find some art that we really like and then imitate it. Cause the baby will be listening all the time and just having constant immersion. And then it'll start picking up things in the environment that it hears all the time and imitating it. And it learns an entire language. Like, we don't really think that language is a skill until you try to speak it and speak a different language. And you realize, gosh, I can't believe how complicated this whole system is. But we picked it up, you know, just by imitation. And imitation is a really powerful tool for growing your skill. The reason I said that practice crystallizes your skill is that practice is repetition. It's good for things like muscle memory, but with an abstract skill like, you know, art, sometimes imitation's better. Sometimes it's better to go out and see how other artists deal with visual problems and imitate and figure out what they did so that you can apply it to, you know, your drawings, that kind of a thing. But yeah.
I thought that was a really great clarification of something that I think a lot of, the interesting thing is we're told to practice. Practice makes perfect, that old adage. But we're told not to copy, right? Don't copy. Don't plagiarize. And you did in this essay, which again we'll link to in the show notes, and I've got up on the screen, you make a really clear distinction between what's plagiarizing and what's stealing. So yeah, I thought that was a really nice way to put it. It's like this idea of, like, it is good to crystallize your skill set, but that's not the complete picture. That's not everything that we should be aiming at, right?
Yeah. Yeah, we always hear that Picasso quote that's like, great artists steal, but figuring out exactly what that means, like, there's truth to it, but there's also, like, you could take it the wrong way. And there's a lot of confusion there, but
I suppose there's a lot of ambiguity in if you ask, what are they stealing? If essentially you are finding a way to steal the experience of that artist because you put yourself in a situation to solve a similar challenge by imitating them, but yet not by doing it through rules, you're doing it just by getting immersed.
Yeah,
and that I think that is a chance to steal experience.
Mm-hmm. And I was talking to, I've been interested in this idea lately of, like, you have the rules, you have the grammar of an art form, but then you have the actual practice of it. Like, when we speak, we don't you know, we don't say, okay, now I need to conjugate this verb, and then we just do it because we know it sounds right. And I think it's the same way with art. Like, you could know all the rules of perspective and things, but you really just need to draw what feels right. And because you need to internalize, you know, all these aesthetics that are an external thing. And I was talking with Jake Parker maybe a month ago, just asking him like how he learned, and he said he was self-taught. And he said that he had started out by doing a lot of imitation, a lot of just lots of drawing and just copying from whatever he was interested in, and just learning that way. And for him, it was instinct for a long time. And then recently, when he started to teach what he knew, he had to like codify it and make it into, you know,
the grammar
of what he was doing. Yeah. So it was really interesting to me, the idea that you don't need to, you need to feel, you need to intuit, you know, good aesthetics and good artistic principles, but you don't always need a name for everything.
I just, one thing to point out though, that that transition into teaching is yet another kind of experience to force yourself to adapt to, right? Yeah. All of a sudden you've got this commitment to say, well, this thing you internalized, now you have to somehow convey that experience partially through explicit expression of the rules and whatever grammar you may have discovered but aren't familiar with and haven't verbalized or expressed. And you don't want to only do it in that way because you need to convey experience to other people. You know, so anyway, it's a really, teaching is a fantastic situation to try to gain a more tangible grasp on that.
Yeah, area. I think both are important. It's important to know the rules of grammar, and it's also important to be able to you know, intuit what things you're supposed to say, that kind of a thing. It's definitely an interplay between both.
Speaking of teaching, that leads me to the next strip that I wanted to talk about, the next essay. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about Hug the Elephant?
Oh, yeah.
And I want it starts with the teacher saying, there are no rules to art, therefore I have nothing to teach you, which is funny. As a guy who has been tempted to default to that position in the classroom, right? I can't bind you with rules, but then you make this case in the essay. Being a slave to rules gives yourself more freedom to express yourself in the way you want. What kind of Zen Cohen nonsense is this?
It's definitely it's kind of a paradox, and it's not intuitive because the first we often define freedom as no rules. But I would say that the right rules are the most freeing. I don't know. I don't know how to describe it except with just abstract kind of like let's say you have two islands, and the islands, on the people who live on the island, they're blind. All these people are blind, and you have a bunch of holes on the islands. It's kind of a horrible situation because the blind people can fall in the holes. One island though has fences around the holes, and the blind people, they can run around and be free because they know they're not going to fall in. But the other guys are like kind of scared, even though they have less constraints, less rules, less fences. They're like afraid of falling in a hole. I don't even know what I'm saying right now, but it's a paradox. I mean, but I still think it's true that.
Well, the example I like to use when I'm talking about this, because I talk about this a lot in my classrooms, is that I create a lot of assignments that are games with very, very strict parameters. It must be this format, this many panels. You can write about whatever you want, but you have to use distance in your story. Every shot must demonstrate a use of distant objects and close foreground objects. So you're free to write whatever you want, but you have these certain limitations. The kids go, oh, why? I'm like, because limitations breed creativity. And if I present you with a difficult problem to solve with parameters, you're going to find creative ways out of that mess. And then the example I like to use is I say, like, if you walk up to somebody on the street and say, tell me a story, they're going to go, But if I say, tell me a story about your 7th birthday party, they've got a starting point. I've limited their options and thereby freed them to just jump in and start talking to me, right?
It's true, yeah.
We lost Rob for a second there, but he's back.
Hello.
We were talking about limitations breeding creativity, in case you didn't pick that up from a little bit we were saying. But yeah, yeah. So I thought that was another really great essay where, you know, you're pointing out that you're not talking about fascism. You're talking about creating some parameters around something so that you can begin to investigate it. Because like you said, the elephant, hug the elephant, you know, like you talk about there's an elephant in the room and you use that old, is it a parable? What is it?
I don't know what it is. It's been around for a long time, though, to just describe the subjectivity of perception. Mm-hmm. I don't know where it came from, though.
Here, let me pull this up, because this is another great part of the essay that I think really beautifully describes the whole situation. You just think about snowflakes. It is said that no two snowflakes are alike, yet all of them have six tips and a hexagonal structure at the center. Right? There's a rule to snowflakes, yet we have an infinite variety of snowflakes, right?
Yeah. That concept makes me incredibly excited. I think a lot of people look at diversity and say, look at this. There are so many different things. Therefore, there must be no constants in the universe. But when I look at just the way the universe works, I say, it seems to me that at the center of the universe, there could be order. It's just there's so much permutations of a single law that, you know, you'll never see the end of them. Like, it's so interesting to me. Like, you have a chess game, and it's got 64 squares, and it's got these pieces that can only move a certain way, and yet any person can play a game that's never been played before in the history of mankind. You know, every single game is unique. Because there's just so many permutations. There's games that are incredible that haven't been discovered yet because the masters haven't played them yet. It's really exciting, the idea of permutation, and not to just declare that there's no absolutes in the world, there's no, you know, truth in the world, but that you know, the laws that exist have such a diversity to them, like it, within themselves. It's just a beautiful concept that I really like a lot.
That I think that's just really I think that's really helpful to someone starting out, where it's comforting in both that the results aren't predetermined. I'm not doomed if I've tried one, I've practiced one style, not another, and whatever, I can keep finding the possibilities. Or yet at the same time, you can have comfort in the structure, and you can have comfort in that there's tons of flexibility either way.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's not that, it's not a scary path.
Yeah. There's room to create something new, out of the old things, I guess.
That's awesome.
Like there's these rules of appeal, you know, and how appeal works, and how, like, what looks pleasing to the human eye, and that there is, you know, specific rules that you can name, but there's no end to how you can use those rules, you know, and to what kind of art you can create, which is super exciting.
It also speaks to the notion of, are you going to look at what is before you as a threat, or are you going to look at it as a challenge, right? Like, this project I'm on, this collaborator, he's really hemming me in with all of this, really prescriptive structuring, or maybe lack of structure. Maybe he's so willy-nilly, he's so wishy-washy, he won't commit to anything. This is an opportunity to work with what you got and make something. What, Rob, I'm not talking about you.
I'm trying to make you laugh. Right. Obviously, it's one of those good news, bad news bits of advice and wisdom where, you know what, I was just looking for the easy answer, and you know, you just handed me a fortune cookie, but oh well.
That is that's what I love about these essays too. I mean, that's what we were talking about at the top. What Stephen was saying is, like, you know, you didn't want to just go like, oh, here's cartoonist heaven. If you follow these six steps, you're in. Mm-hmm. What I love about these is it's putting the responsibility on the reader to think about it. Right. It's very much it echoes a lot of conversations I've had with Rob off mic, where we just talk about life, and Rob will always come back at me with a really thoughtful question. And I go, you know, I don't know. Now I got to figure this out. But okay, can we talk about one of my favorites? One of my very favorites is planning for the possible, which I'm going to pull up here. And let me read my favorite quote from this. It's so great. If looking at your goals, so important. Got to make lots of goals. We got to figure out where we want to go. But there's different kinds of goals. And you say, if looking at your goals makes you anxious or disheartened, that might be a sign that you are trying to do something outside of your control. Mm. What? I am in control. That's why I make goals. That's why I make lists. I got a to-do list. I got my emergent task planner. The future is laid out before me. I know what I'm doing next Tuesday. Steven, don't take that away from me.
Yeah. I am always in that struggle. And I was just talking, so I mentioned at the start of the comic, a cartoonist named Michael Regina, who's my friend, he kind of inspired me to write that essay because he did something amazing. He has a wife and kids, and he works a full-time job, and he managed to do a full-color graphic novel in just a little over a year. And for him, it's just like, how do I dream about being a cartoonist when I live in this job and I have this family, I have so many responsibilities, and it doesn't seem possible. And dealing with all these things, I think he's thinking about writing. I was just talking with him yesterday. He's thinking about actually writing a comic kind of similar to these essays about how he did it, like how he, within the constraints of his, you know, work and his life, he still managed to create something and, you know, be a creator and stuff. But I don't know where I'm going with that. But yes, it can be really stressful to be so hungry for something that you don't have control over. And just how do you get a perspective where you can be freed from the things that you're trying to control, so to speak, and let them do their own things.
Well, a line from early on in the essay is that your friend, he says, I want to make comics. And he makes a plan. Yeah. And he achieves it. He makes a comic. He's in control of that. And then he turns to the camera and says, I want to make comics for a living. Mm. And you point out, I don't think in any kind of nihilistic way, but in a way where you say, like, well, that's not entirely up to you. Because part of that depends on you either finding a publisher or finding audience approval, or, you know, there's other factors at work there beyond you just making something great. And so you do this really great job of rephrasing the question. As you say, don't say, my goal is to write a song that people love. You don't have any control over that. Say, my goal is to write a song that's hard not to love. Now, that was a great flipping of the whole thing, right?
Yeah, for some reason that helps you kind of focus on what is in your control to kind of pursue your goals that way.
Your job is to be excellent, right?
Be excellent.
Excellent.
Be great.
I totally did not mean to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I can barely claim credit for my own successes even. And I think this is something also important to know, just this whole idea of what you're not in control of. Sometimes you'll fail because of things outside of your control. Sometimes you'll succeed because of things outside of your control. And for me, like, it was just a one in a million thing. Like, I was putting Mal and Chad comic strips up on my website I would write the strips for my newspaper. And a publisher found me, and I think there's probably only like 100 people visiting the site. And like, did I have any control over whether a publisher would come along and be one of those 1 out of 100 people? Like, it's a really humbling thought when you think about it. And like, even this book that I'm now, looks like it's going to turn into my job, which is kind of exciting. Even this book I started 2 years ago without any thought to how it was going to be published, and I didn't know that. Like, I expected to still be making Mal and Chad books, and I didn't know that, you know, my contract wouldn't get renewed, and that this would be how I'd be making a living. So, It's just important to know that it's not in your control, and it just keeps you humble, because sometimes a cartoon or an artist will have some kind of success, and they'll just take all the credit for it. And so when things start falling apart, they start blaming themselves for that too, and they attack themselves because they've taken credit for things that they actually didn't do. Like, it's important to kind of like keep those things separate, you know, what you can control, what you can't control. And yeah, I wish I didn't end all of my statements with, yeah, it makes my point sound like I need to work on that.
Well,
practice more.
That's the holy syllable, isn't it? I think that.
Yeah. So, yeah.
It finishes out the equation, right? You just balance it out. Like,
it's the period. Well, it's the period.
Yes. Yeah. but yeah, it didn't need it, because it does really stand on its own, which is the, it's hard, because like it's like, what are some other ways where you've attained that perspective, where essentially separating yourself from your art and also separating the success of your art from yourself as well, and the art.
Yeah, how do you get in that situation? That question.
What's the question?
What's that?
What's the question?
Well, how do you, let's see, how did you attain that? What are some ways that, or maybe like what would be a good exercise to attain that perspective?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I fail at it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just put that out there. Like my Kickstarter is going really well, and I got like a slightly negative comment on my wall, and I was just like crippled. I was like, oh no, I'm messing up everything. Everyone's going to back out of their pledges. And that's just putting my identity in what people think about me, you know, like, and I think if I was to really boil down why I make comics, it's like, I want people to like me. I just want people to like me. That's kind of why I make it. And so I fail at that all the time, and I have to like turn away from it. I think that the only way out, because really you could just move your identity to something else that is just as, you know, as fleeting as art, and it won't really help anything. Like sometimes recently in this last year when things have gotten financially tough, I've really just kind of like, when I ask myself if I'm okay, it's like asking how much money is in the bank. And I look at the money in the bank and I'm like, am I going to be okay? And that's something that's just as fleeting as art, you know? And so I think the key is asking yourself, what can I find to mount myself on that is something that doesn't change? And I think it lies in relationships with other people. And for me, I mean, I know this isn't for everyone. For me, it's like my relationship with God, you know, that he loves me in an unchanging way, that even if I died, he would still love me. And like, he's that treasure that I have that no one can take away. So obviously that's like a huge step of faith and that kind of a thing. But I still think that some things to base your identity off of are still more stronger than others. Like just asking yourself what lasts. Like if my whole house burns down and I lose everything, like what do I still have? You know, you have the relationships, you have people who love you, these kind of things. And there's just such a better place to put your identity. But it's really weird, because like I'll say art is not you. You know, you are not your art. But I'm kind of leaving something unsaid, which is, who are you? You know, like trying to figure out. So it's really kind of an existential question that everyone needs to ask themselves, you know, like, who am I? Am I really the product of my own hands? You know, when I make a little piece of paper, which is a drawing, is this who I am? You know, is this who I am? Is this who I am? And I think it's an important question that people should ask more, you know, just really seeking out things that last, you know, things that are truly meaningful, you know, living a really meaningful life. What does that mean? And obviously, as you said, a lot of people will have a lot of different approaches, but yeah.
That's cool. I mean, I heard a lot of strategies there. Honestly, getting outside your art sounds like a good idea. Finding ways to have other perspective. But at the same time, I think so even if you're going through, it sounds like, well, you make a great piece of art and will feel the elation. If it gets great reactions, that feels wonderful. I mean, that's part of why we do this. Yeah. And that's all right. But then asking it too and saying like, gosh, I'm someone who just does this and keeps thinking about this. Mm-hmm. That's something that's beyond the art too, right? That's another good strategy where it's like, I made a thing, even if I failed with the thing or it had a bad reaction, I can still explore the thing. Mm-hmm. And that's separate. So that's
right. Yeah, that is the more timeless or permanent piece of the thing, is that looking at it as a process itself, stepping away from it far enough to see that there's a pattern to this process and that it's intriguing, and you get to go, what a wonder that you get to go through that thing again and again and again, right? And not be played upon by it. Right. Oh man, we're getting philosophical now. This is cool.
Yeah,
I got one more. It's a question, actually. So one other thing I wonder about is what about looking back on your path? Do you look at your like your progression or milestones at all? And if so, how do you go about that?
How do you like, measure
your progression as far as like anything from like the any of the qualities you value in, you know, whether it's the how concise you conveyed, a message on a page that, you know, really delivered with, you know.
I think that hindsight, the hindsight is the one to pay attention to. Like, you know, measuring yourself by the work of the day is so much harder, because like you have a blank piece of paper and you draw something and you can't tell if you're getting better or not. And it's when you look back at those sketchbooks that you've filled up and you're like, wait a minute, here's a sketchbook I did, you know, 8 years ago, and I can't even believe how, you know, much better I've gotten. It's that magnitude of scale kind of a paradox, where just like a tower is made out of a million bricks. When you look at that brick that you've done today, you're like, this isn't very much. But then you look into the past and you're like, whoa, I laid down 1,000 bricks in 2 years. It's a huge pile that I've made a big pile. But measuring yourself should be in terms of years, not days or hours.
Cool.
Yeah.
I think that's a good reminder. I mean, and that's one of those things about relaying that experience to somebody who's just starting out, where they say, oh, but I'm just starting out, I don't have those bricks behind me. Don't worry. A lot of us have gone through this, and we've all made a big pile.
Exactly. We made a big pile. So if you take one thing away, all of our stars, we're just making piles over here.
Do we want to? Okay, so everybody should go to doodlealley.com and check out all the essays on there. They're all great. We only got to highlight a few of them. But we also should make a mention and make a point to say, go check out the Brick by Brick Kickstarter. So this is to print up a print version of the essay collection, yes?
Yeah. And, most of the essays are going to be online, but there will be 3 extra essays that'll be in the book. If you are tight for money, there's a simple $5 PDF you can buy.
$5 pledge gets you a PDF of the book. $20 or more gets you the book. Mm-hmm. And then these are nice simple tiers, Stephen. I appreciate this. $25 or more, you get a signed book. $30 or more, you get a signed book with a sketch. $40 or more, you get a book and a poster. It's a good looking comic, man. It's a really nice looking comic.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out printers. So I might have to like ask you guys about all this self publishing and all these other things, because I have so much to learn. Like, the learning curve right now is going to be, and I'm just intimidated by all the things I have to do, and I'm like, I think I also need to like get the print run out and like spend as much as I can before January 1st hits, and I have to pay taxes, and there's so many things I don't know. I am illiterate in it. I went today to get.
I just like how the Kickstarter arc is. Boy, I hope I make my goal. I hope I make my goal. Hooray, I made my goal. Oh, no, I made my goal.
Oh, no, yeah.
You know who's written a lot of really awesome things on that topic is Tyler James.
Yep.
Yeah, and he's got some great articles at comicstribe.com on that very topic. And he actually has had workshops on at Lean Into Art, which is actually currently under construction, and we're redoing. But so sorry about teasing that one.
I'm bookmarking his stuff right now.
But he has a bunch of material around a workshop called Rack My Book. That was all about essentially, his approach to doing independent publishing. And yep. Very, very informative.
And but yeah. Also check out Comics Tribe, comixtribe.
Yes.
Tyler is also the mastermind behind the 30 characters challenge, which is going on right now at the time of this recording. And Rob's been participating a character a day for the month of November.
Yeah.
It's neat.
Speaking of creative challenges.
Yeah, actually.
Yeah, keep that creativity sustainable. 30 days.
Or creative sustainability.
Right to the edge.
Okay, was there anything I missed? Anything? And we're going to give you a chance for the final word, Stephen, before we kick into the quests.
If you're a experienced artist, I think that instead of I think a lot of experienced artists, you know, they've done really well, and it's tempting to be like, well, I climbed this giant mountain, so everyone else should be able to as well. But I think a much better thing is to just give encouragement to people who are just starting out. Like, even, I don't know when it was, but like 6 months ago or something, like I called up Jersey and was just asking him, like, how do you survive as a freelancer? How do you do these things? And he was just like, he sat me down and was really patient. So anything like that, pay it forward, you know, just keep spreading out the encouragement for younger artists. Cause I think that's mostly what they need. Not usually just kind of a whip on the back. Just get going.
Spare the rod and spoil the child. Wait a minute, dude, you've been to Japan. You know what those Zen Zen monasteries are like. It's a very martial form of meditation where they'll hit you and you bow with gratitude because he hit you to remind you to stay mindful, right?
That's right. Well, you know, if you do need lashes, you can come to me and I'll give them to you.
For free.
That's my next book.
That's not a Kickstarter tier. That's just a gimme.
Yeah.
He'll make a pile and he'll give you lashes. Wow. So many great quotes in this episode. All right. Well, Rob, we got to get to the quest. Steven, are you going to stick around or do you have to go?
I'm here. Yeah.
All right. Great. All right. So if you're ready, Rob, I'm ready to hit the quest music.
Ready.
All right, so quests. What are quests? Mini art challenges that we offer on the Lean Into Art website. Usually something you can do in 2 to 5 minutes just to jumpstart your creativity. Last time, I kicked off the quest with, what was it? Instacast, where it was just like a series of questions to probe your brain to get you thinking about your life experiences, which you can then translate into making characters. Rob, you have a quest this time that I think is better than Instacast. Not that we're competing, but I do think it's better. I was very impressed with that. When I read it, I was like, oh, dang it. I wish I thought of that.
Well, essentially, that you're the audience I wrote it for. So, yay. I mean, that's, yes, you make it you make it easy, Jersey, because I just think, what's going to make Jersey giggle or make him go, woo? And last quest, Lean Into Our Quest 9 was all about your kung fu of bringing people step by step through, answer a few questions, and all of a sudden do some drawings, and all of a sudden, boom, you have a cast of characters, right? So I thought, that was pretty awesome. So I had to, you know, you imply. He almost set, well, you set the bar, right? I mean, got to make this fun and interesting for all. So in Leaning to Art Quest number 10, it's called This Character is Lying. And it's another series of quest cards. So again, like each one of these is an exercise. Pick one, do them all. But this one happens to be a series, so it works best if you do all three. And they're intended to be done in as little as 2 to 5 minutes. But by all means, if you want to go longer, feel free. And what you do in this series of three cards is essentially, first, it's a bit of an editing exercise. I provide a bit of a verbose expression of I'm not going to ruin the surprise. You have to go download the card to get into it, but it's basically a character saying something that seems like it's very, it could be sincere maybe, but it really could be edited down, much like my description of this quest. In quest card 2, you actually take that and put it into a couple of different options for word balloons. And think like what conveys this better? Like, should I break this sentence up into multiple words to see the impact and make it separate, or just, you know, group it together? What flows well? And then number 3 is the ultimate juxtaposition, where you actually get to think about what two different facial expressions and how that changes the whole context. And to accomplish the ultimate goal of the overall quest, which is to convey this character is lying.
I think that's pretty great. One of the things that excited me about this one is comics is a visual medium. And of course, I'm always going to tie it back to comics. This isn't making a comic, but it uses a lot of the same skill set. And one of the things you can do in comics is you can have somebody say, yeah, well, right? It's just in text. We have no context for yeah, well. Well, how are they saying it? Are they going like, yeah, well, or are they going, yeah, well? We need the body language as a contextual item in that situation. And then also there's a way of saying, go over there. I mean, this is something I harp on all the time. Can you make your character say, go over there, as a way only that character can say it, right? That's a key to writing good dialogue. Mm. So this uses all those same tools. That's what gets me so jazzed about this particular one.
Some of my intent behind it was all about, I learned so much by editing my comics. I wanted to make that into an exercise. It's that, and hopefully it makes it easier if you just take something that someone else set up, again, creative limitations, and then see what comes of it, all in the spirit of just, practicing.
Yep. Love it. So, okay. What's the deadline for this one? Yeah, I know.
It's a little bit of an equation or a puzzle, because we have not figured out our schedule conflict for in the Thursday, the 28th of November, which would be our next podcast, is actually, if you're in the U.S., you'll know that's the Thanksgiving holiday. Right.
Right.
we'll have to figure that out. So we'll, you know what? Check out Lean Into Art on Twitter, or, you know, Jersey or Rob Stenzinger, and then you'll, you know, we'll all work toward roughly that deadline.
Yes. Come on. I got a feeling we're either going to do it on the 27th or the 29th. We're going to do it in either the Wednesday before or the Friday afterwards.
Perfect.
Probably the Wednesday before is my guess. Depending on Rob's travel plans, we'll find out, but it'll be close to that. So let's just peg it at the 26th of November as the deadline on it. What do you say?
Sounds good. What I meant to say was the 26th of November is the date. Thanks for figuring that out. Yeah, perfect. So we've got a plan. And so what happens if you actually, if you go through this, you don't have to share your efforts, but these quest cards are kind of handy. You can just download them to your, or print them out or whatever, and then, tweet a picture, right? And then when you do, or, you know, if you choose to do that and have the hashtag LeahQuest10, then we actually reflect on them on the show that occurs after the deadline. And it's always a ton of fun to see the participation. But be sure you just tag it with the hashtag, you know, #LeahQuest10, and we'll find it.
And I'm pulling up what the last quest cards looked like so people know what they're downloading. See, it's just a card like this. You just do a little exercise in the big box, and then there's some little boxes to check off for the points that you get for finishing in under 2 minutes, finishing under 5 minutes, or finishing over 5 minutes. But don't take that time limit too seriously. That's just there just for the pure fun of it, just giving yourself a little bit of an extra challenge. But it's at leanintoart.com/quests. So... cool. I'm looking forward to seeing the entries. Yeah, and we'll talk about them on the show that we do, I guess, the next show. Yeah.
Probably the 27th.
So if you share them with that hashtag, we will talk about your entries on the show. So, gosh, I feel like that was a pretty good show. Yeah.
That was a great show. Thank you, Stephen, for...
Yeah, we covered a lot of ground.
Is it? Yeah.
Sorry, Rob.
No, I'm just, yeah, and thank you for your effort in paying it forward with these essays. They're fantastic. And Mel and Chad is awesome as well, of course.
Thanks. Yeah, I think for right now, I'm hoping to kind of launch into this and into this brand of making comic essays and continue to make this content and have maybe another book out in a year or so. I want to get back to kids comics, but I think that's going to be on the side for now. I'm working on a script, and I'm just loving, like, you have your job and then you have that little side, you know, creative project that no one tells you what to do. And I, right now that I'm creating in that space, and I'm loving not having deadlines, not having anything that, so yeah.
Oh man! After the schedule you must have kept on the Mal and Chad books, I'm betting, like, not having somebody going, where are the pages, must be pretty nice.
It's nice because I can throw away everything I've done so easily. Like, whereas before it was so painful to have to give up any type of work that I had done. But it's just like I can edit so easily. We'll see where that takes me.
Well, Stephen, please say that you will be back in the future. We'd love to have you back.
Yeah, it'd be fun. I'd love to be on the show and talk to you guys about whatever you're thinking about next.
Cool. So, Stephen, you can be found at doodlealley.com, malandchad.com. Where else do you hold presence for people can find you and say, Mr. McCraney, I need some more advice about this thing?
Twitter is a good place to talk to me. Tumblr is a good place to get my work. And I like Tumblr a lot because then you can easily share it with your friends if it's something you want to pass along. And my Twitter handle is just Steve McCraney. My Tumblr is just Stephen McCraney. So just look up my name and you'll find it.
Good branding.
Cool. And we will be sure to link to the all those in the show notes.
Thank you, guys.
And be sure, you guys only have a few days left for the Brick by Brick Kickstarter. So $5 gets you the PDF. And that's it. Just go to Kickstarter.com, search for Steve McCraney or Brick by Brick. We will link to it in the show notes as well. Only a couple days left to support it and get some neat stuff.
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of great reward tiers above and beyond that as well. So, yeah. Signed books, posters, all sorts of cool stuff.
All right. Well, thanks everybody for downloading, listening, and watching. If you enjoyed this discussion, a great way you can pay it forward, since that is a theme of today, is you can go to iTunes, give the show a star review. You don't have to write a whole review, although that would be cool too. But just, you know, star review, however many you think we deserve. Or you could, if you're watching this on YouTube, give it a thumbs up. That helps other people find the show, helps more people discover this thing and benefit from cool cats like Steve McCraney. Did I miss anything, Rob? Oh, the extra leans. Go to leanintoart.com. You can sign up for our newsletter. You get an extra show that we do in between where Rob and I have like weekly reflections on our art week. And usually the discussions get really spirited and fun. We just got a wonderful email from Nathan Siebold, who's really got a kick out of a recent Lean Intoart where we were talking about Battlecross.
Yes. Excellent band out of Detroit.
but it's a fun time. So anyway... thank you, everybody, and thank you, Stephen, and thank you, Rob. Until next time, I have been Jersey Drozd of leanintoart.com and Jersey on Twitter.
Yes, and thank you again, Jersey, and thank you again, Stephen. And I've been Rob Stenzinger of leanintoart.com and Rob Stenzinger on Twitter.
Okay. Thanks for having me.
Okay, bye.
Thank you.
show notes for this episode can be found at leanintoarts.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at the user leanintoart, and you can reach us via email at leanintoart@gmail.com. And remember, leaners aren't wieners. Thanks for listening.